Greetings once again to those who gather in the sacred groves, be ye members of the staff, student teachers of the mysteries, or visitors to the campus. I'm recording this little talk for general access, so it will be posted in Hall 16 on Planetary Tantra. So it's available free to anyone who happens to be registered with Nemeta. I'm calling this talk Iamblichus on Divination. Iamblichus. I-A-M-B-L-I-C-H-U-S. That's the name of a Greek philosopher of the 4th century. Well known, well documented, well connected. I'd like you to know at the outset that I consider this talk to be one of the highlights of Planetary Tantra. That is to say, it belongs in the inventory of units, talk and text, filed under 16, filed and coded to the number 16. And that's a massive amount of material. So I've grouped the material, and I'm continuing to regroup it and redevelop it. I've grouped this particular talk, or I've inserted this particular talk, in a new group of units, which I've titled Telestics. So this is a talk about Telestics, and others may follow. In this particular talk, I refer to the Greek mystic and philosopher Iamblichus as a way of illustrating to you a point that I have often made about telestic practices. Now let me just review the terminology for you. Just give me a couple of minutes here so I can make sure that you have the right syntax operating. The best and shortest definition of gnosis is cognitive ecstasy. That is to say that gnosis, literally knowledge, refers to things that are known in a state of ecstasy. You have ecstasy when you have gnosis. And so it is not ordinary knowledge. In fact, it is knowledge that you acquire in a trance. The telestic method involves putting yourself into a trance. And among the various parameters of the telestic method, I want to underscore this particular assertion. I've made some assertions about what it's like to do telestics, a good many of them actually. And one of the things I've said, you may recall this assertion, is that there is nothing demonical or evil or obscene, twisted, tormenting in the supernatural. Nothing at all. Supernatural is an eruption of awesome beauty, love, delight, power. And there is nothing in it that corresponds to what has been described as the dark, evil, demonic aspect of human experience. So I've made this assertion numerous times, and in connection with the channel Mandela Effect Decoded, I developed a block of talks concerning love and the supernatural. And in those talks, I reiterated this point. This is not a claim I make. This is not how I wish it were. This is not how I want it to be. This is not how I pretend it is. This is how it is when you have the capacity in naked awareness and in a state of a sober and steady trance to enter the supernatural. All you see is beauty and love. There are no demons. There are no, quote, dark, evil, tormenting forces or entities. I put dark in quotes because, as you know, I reject the idea that dark is evil. Things done in secrecy, in the dark, figuratively speaking, are evil. Dark. Dark is sublime. Sublime. And dark is a dimension of the supernatural to be known and loved and explored without measure. Now I realize that it's possible that some people, upon hearing my claim that you can enter the supernatural in a way that is completely free of any demons or tormenting forces, there are some people who would doubt that statement. They would say, well, that's just not true, because there's so much testimony to the contrary. There's so much testimony of the human animal being tormented, you know, by demons of one kind or another. Psychic phantoms, call them whatever you will. The intensity of the power of human imagination is such that it can actually manifest demons. Go back and look at the ectoplasmic forms emanated by spiritualistic mediums at the end of the 19th century. There is a phenomenon in which the human animal can actually exude demonic, tormenting, terrible entities that attack it. But that is the product and working of the human psyche. It has nothing to do with the dimension of the supernatural. So I made this assertion, and I realize that it may be unacceptable to some people. And at the time I've made it, at the time over the years that I've restated it, I always spoke as the shaman, as the Gnostic capable of entering the state of cognitive ecstasy in telestic practice, thus speaking directly from my own experience and the experience of others who have joined me. Although some of them got scared off by one thing or another. But others have enjoyed a most blissful and demon-free passage into the supernatural in my company. So there you have it. So I'm just speaking from my experience, you know, my limited experience as a human animal. And I never expected what I said to be verified. I didn't need it to be verified. Now I've found verification of it. I just came across it the other day, and it occurred to me that it would be both enjoyable and instructive to share it with you. Why? Well, certainly, some of you out there deem it desirable to experiment with mushrooms or mescaline, or peyote, or ayahuasca, or other psychoactive plants, whether they be synthetic or natural, well, you're going to encounter, you may well encounter, what you consider to be evil, dark, demonic forces. And you might wonder about the nature of these forces, and you might wonder about the claim of yours truly, that you can take the beauty option. That's an instruction, by the way. In some telestic sessions with mushrooms, depending on the species, some species already know the trick, but others you have to go through a formality with the species. And You have to tell them why you have invited them into your body, and you have to tell them what your intention is. And so with certain species, you say, no, I'm an accomplished shaman, and I take the beauty option. And they will snap to it like that. They know exactly what you're talking about. That means you go straight to beauty. You do not have a trial of your ego death, of defacing the demons in your emotional life, and your sexual frustration, and all the horrible things that happened to you, and the things that never were accomplished. You don't have to face any of that. You don't have to go through any catharsis. You take the beauty option, and you go straight to beauty. Well, I've made these assertions before, as I said, and now I'm going to have the pleasure of showing you how my assertions are verified by a prominent mystic and philosopher from the time of Hypatia. Now, I'm subtitling this talk, No Scrubs in the Supernatural. I don't know why. I just got this quirk as I was putting together the text. So this notion of no scrubs came to my mind. So I went back and I looked for that R&B song from the group TLC. It came out in 1999. It was a huge, huge, huge hit. So you have these urban witches, these sassy black or Chicano black girls, saying that they don't want no scrubs. So, some of you may recall the huge hit No Scrubs from R&B pop soul funk trio TLC in 1999. In street jive, a scrub is an ugly, creepy dude who demands attention or gives you, the girl, attention that you don't want. Translated to telestics, a scrub is any allegedly demonic force that scrubs you. That is to say, it irritates you, it aggravates you, and it preys upon the attention of the neophyte or directs itself upon the neophyte in an aggressive and tormenting manner. And there you go. So there are no scrubs in the supernatural, my friends. And now I'm going to give you the word and the passage from Iamblichus that verifies and backs up my assertion. How wonderful is that? So who is Iamblichus? Well, lived basically from 245 to 325. That would have been 10 years after the murder of Hypatia. And he was a Syrian philosopher associated with the school of Neoplatonism. Although more strictly, he was by his own definition a Pythagorean and not a Platonist. He is said to have been of Arab origin, and he placed himself in the lineage of the Chaldeans, which is a general name for the Magi who founded the Gnostic movement. Arab in this usage, by the way, has nothing to do with Muslim. This was well before the epoch of Islam. Arab in this usage includes the vast stock of Aryan, Iranian races and ethnicities who populated the Middle East in ancient times. Phlegetonus from the Grail legend was also a Magian from the same ethnic regional background. The headgear says it all. Picture him with a wrapped turban, Phlegetonus, not a towel, and not a black beanie yarmulke, if that's what it's called. So, Iamblichus was widely known in his time, although little information survives on the actual events of his life. His biographer, Eunapius, states that he was born at Colchis in Syria, the heartland of the mysteries. He was the son of an illustrious family. They were wealthy, and they were said to have royal lineage connecting to the priest kings of Emesa. His disagreement over the practice of theurgy, note that word, with another Greek philosophical mystic, Porphyry, led him to write De Mysteriis Egyptiorum, on the Egyptian mysteries. He wrote in Greek, of course, and today there are four translations of this text. And we're lucky to have it, because the greater part of his work has not survived. It did not survive the literary and cultural holocaust that attended the rise of Christianity. Now, if I might take just a moment, a couple of minutes, and insert a little footnote here. The name Eunapius rang a bell for me. Eunapius is the ancient source of the life of Iamblichus, the biographer, as it were. Why does that ring a bell? Well, here you go, to page 55 of Not in His Image. In 386, when Hypatia was 16, pagan rituals were outlawed by state decree. From that time on, popular shrines and mystery temples were vandalized more and more frequently, flagrantly, and violently. When Alaric, or Alaric, excuse me, warrior chieftain of the Goths, invaded Greece in 396, the last legitimate hierophant at Eleusis had already died, and only a handful of initiates remained. The Neoplatonic philosopher Eunapius of Sardis, who may have taught Hypatia, was one of them. Describing how Christian converts flooded to the ancient sanctuaries ruined by the Gothic invaders, he lamented, quote, "The godlessness of those who in their dark garments entered with him, Alaric, unhindered, and by the dissolution of the hierophantic rules and of the sacred bond they embodied," end quote. So there's Eunapius giving a first-hand account of the destruction of the mysteries in the time of Hypatia. That was the time when Iamblichus lived, and he would appear to have outlived her for some 10 years or so. The passage that I'm going to cite on divination comes from On the Mysteries, the version translated by Thomas Taylor, published in London in 1821, and it confirms my assertion about encountering nothing evil, ugly, or menacing in Telestic sessions. In this citation, which I'm going to read, Iamblichus talks about the character of experience in the mysteries, he says, as reported to him by the Chaldeans. Chaldeans is a code word for the Magian Gnostics of Iran. And he talks about the whole experience in the context of theurgy. So there is this word, theurgy, which is composed of theo, meaning that which is divine, and orgia, meaning the working or operation. So theurgy is a divine operation, working with the divine powers. You see here I've included a kind of hackneyed or stereotypic illustration of what is supposed to happen in rituals of witchcraft. And witchcraft would be, in a sense, a kind of late version of theurgy. The theurgy of the Gnostic initiates, the theurgy of the Egyptian mysteries, was highly elaborate, highly formal ritual magic. Then later on, and all evidence of it, all genuine evidence of it, was destroyed, almost all. So then later on, the word became synonymous with witchcraft, you see. Theurgy, or God working, is a term for interaction with supernatural powers. Better said today, in the context of Gaian Telestics, it is the art of handling power, working with supernatural telluric forces, such as the nodal frequencies of the Shakti cluster. So here I have a page, just one typewritten page, and I'm going to read you this passage from chapter 31 of On the Mysteries. Again, therefore, still worse than this, excuse me, in the previous chapter, he was talking about delusions and errors concerning certain aspects of the mystical practices of the Gnostics and the true initiates. So he picks up that critical theme. This is a critical assessment coming from a Gnostic. Quote, again, therefore, still worse than this is the explanation of sacred operations, theurgy, which assigns as the cause of divination, quote, a certain genus of demons, which is naturally fraudulent, omniform, and various, and which assumes the appearances of gods and demons, and the souls of the deceased, end quote. I shall therefore relate to you, in answer to this, what I once heard from the prophets of the Chaldeans. That would be the Magi. So, he continues, such gods as are truly divinities are alone the givers of good, alone associate with good men, and with those who are purified by the sacerdotal art, and from these they amputate all vice and every passion. When these also impart their light, that which is evil and at the same time demoniacal vanishes from before more excellent natures, in such manner as darkness when light is present, nor is it able to disturb theurgists in the smallest degree, who receive from this light every virtue, obtain worthy manners, become orderly and elegant in their actions, are liberated from passions, and purified from every disorderly motion and from atheistical and unholy conduct. But those who are themselves flagititious and who leap, as it were, to things of a divine nature in an illegal and disorderly way, these, through the imbecility of their proper energy or through indigence of inherent power, are unable to communicate with the gods, Theoi, the divine forces. End quote. Take a moment to comment on that. There are a couple of expressions in this I really like, and a couple that I might probably translate differently. Don't have my copy on hand right now of the Thomas Taylor translation. Actually, I've ordered the most recent translation just to see how it stands up to scrutiny. He uses the word flagitious, F-L-A-G-I-T-I-O-U-S. Strange word. Seems to relate to the word flagellation. So he's talking about people who attempt to delve into the supernatural, who attempt to approach the gods, who are flagitious. It's a really strange word, isn't it? F-L-A-G-I-T-I-O-U-S. What does that mean? It means they're disturbed people. And maybe their disturbance is due to directing their disturbances upon themselves. They flagellate themselves with their own emotions and their own thoughts. Okay? And they leap, as it were, to things of a divine nature in an illegal and disorderly fashion. I would say in an unethical and reckless manner. They approach the divine in an unethical and reckless manner, and they get what they bring to it. You see, I love this phrase. Through the imbecility of their proper energy. I couldn't agree more. I mean, people who do mushrooms recreationally or any other psychoactive plants or ayahuasca and are taken through these trials with demons and all of these horrible experiences that many people relate are imbeciles. They evoke these experiences through the imbecility of their proper energy. And that other phrase, which is equally brilliant, through indigence of inherent power. Indigence means a weakness. You must meet power with power. You cannot go to the power of the Aeonic Mother. You cannot go nakedly in front of the awesome presence of the power of the earth without power to hold her power. You hold her power in your power. If people go in that direction or attempt to breach that realm with indigence of inherent power, then the results are going to be chaotic and they are going to be attacked and tormented by fictions and fabrications of their own psychic nature. Iamblichus continues, nor are theurgists disturbed by pride or flattery or the enjoyment of exhalations or any violence. But all these, as if struck by lightning, yield and recede without touching the theurgist or being able to approach to them. Couldn't say it any better. It's so true. It's so accurate. Hence, this genus of divination, he's talking about Mantique here, friends, this genus of divination, this method of Mantique is undefiled and sacerdotal, and it is truly divine. This also does not, as you say it does, require me or any other as an arbiter in order that I may prefer it to a multitude of other things. Oh, so good. But it is itself exempt from all things, is supernatural, and has an eternal pre-existence, neither receiving a certain opposition nor a certain transcendency, which has a prearrangement in many things, because it is of itself liberated and uniformly precedes all things. Wow. That syntax stands with the absolute best Dzogchen or Vajrayana Buddhist discourse that you could ever find. This experience of encountering the supernatural in a telestic trance and coming into the presence of the organic light is a stand-alone experience. It is exempt from all things. Do you get this? Is supernatural and has an eternal pre-existence, neither receiving a certain opposition nor a certain transcendency, which has a prearrangement in many things because it is of itself liberated and uniformly precedes all things. Again, I have to say that that description in lapidary syntax of the character of the experience of cognitive ecstasy upon encountering the organic light tops and trumps any statement by a Dzogchen master. You know, the word Dzogchen means the great perfection. And how do you define the great perfection? Well, according to them, I define it differently. They define it as that which is in the state where it is exempt from all conditions and it is always perfect and always has been and always will be perfect. So this is the ultimate realization or the state of awareness that you enjoy in the ultimate realization of Dzogchen. And yet, these characteristics of theurgic experience, to me, describe that experience even better than the Dzogchen people do. Continuing. In other words, in my view, Iamblichus trumps the Dzogchen masters. So to continue, and to this it is requisite that you, and everyone who is a genuine lover of the gods, should give himself wholly. For by this mean, irreprehensible truth will be obtained in divinations, and perfect virtue in souls. And through both these, an assent will be afforded to theurgists to intelligible fire, which ought to be pre-established as the end of all foreknowledge and of every theurgic operation. I mean, this is so technically tight and exact that you can't touch it. I'm staggered by the precision of this. I'd like to see it in a couple of other translations. And I can see this, a suggestion here of how it would otherwise be translated. For instance, where he says, since by this mean, irreprehensible truth will be obtained in divinations. Okay, here's my translation. He's saying, by this standard, the truth to be obtained in the divinatory experience, in the telestic trance, will be irreprehensible. It will be faultless. So, by this standard, faultless, flawless truth will be attained in the divinations of theurgy. And what's the proof of that? Well, I'll let you answer that question. I would like to know the Greek original of intelligible fire. Obviously, intelligible fire is an item in theurgy. Through divination and the perfect virtue in souls, that means that the experience of going into the supernatural informs you with a certain character in your inner life, in your conscience, and in your soul. It shapes and forms your soul into its configuration of its highest potential. And through both these, an ascent will be afforded to Theodorus to intelligible fire. You know, fire, what is fire? Is he talking about natural fire? What is natural fire? Natural fire is something deeply fascinating to observe in a telestic trance. And of course, the standard question that the Gaian or Gnostic theurgist will ask is, what's it to her? What's fire to her? See a tree burning, fireplace, light a match, you produce or make a fire in the woods, a campfire. What's fire to the Aeonic Mother? It's her sense of time. Everything is material. You have a sense of time, oh, the day passing, how many years is this, how old am I, how long is this day, how long is this going to take, how long did that take? You have a sense of time, which you think is completely abstract, but her sense of time is fire. So I don't know what intelligible fire would be. I'm going to have to investigate this. When I get this copy of the latest translation of On the Mysteries, I might do a couple of talks about it. Okay, concluding paragraph. Hence, you in vain adduce the opinion of those who think that divination is affected by an evil demon, since these do not deserve to be mentioned in speculations concerning the gods. It's not even worth mentioning, it's so wrong. At the same time, likewise, they are ignorant of the means of distinguishing truth from falsehood, because they are from the beginning nourished in darkness and are wholly incapable of knowing the principles from which these experiences are truly produced. I would translate, because they are from the beginning nourished in ignorance, fed on ignorance. I wouldn't say darkness. I know what the Greek word for that is, and you need some latitude of translation there. But all in all, I think just from this one passage of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs, you see the brilliance and the lucidity and the precision of this Syrian Gnostic master. And he concludes, here therefore we shall terminate our discussion concerning the mode of divination. So there you go. I have to tell you that I came across this just randomly the other day, this passage, and I never expected that my assertions about the supernatural would be confirmed in this manner. But there you have it. Needless to say, I never needed them to be confirmed. Don't need them to be confirmed. It's like I discovered that water is wet. You know, do I need anybody to confirm that? No. It's as simple as that. It's certainly delightful. A real kick for me to find this passage and to be able to impart it to you and share it with you, as the saying goes. Finally, as just one little footnote, which I can't resist adding, the agenda is really clear on telestics. And as far as I'm concerned, there are standards in planetary tantra. In fact, right now I'm compiling a document of what are the standards of planetary tantra. And believe me, there's quite a few. And believe me, they are rigorous. And some of these standards concern how to conduct a telestic session, how to undertake a telestic session on your own. All of this you will find in the units of planetary tantra, which are free on Nemata, as time goes by. But I will say in closing, and I will say that I make no bones about it. You take a look at what I have accomplished alone, mostly, but also with others, in telestics. Just take a look at that. If that is any measure of the validity of my practice, then you might be, you know, you might be impressed. And then listen to me when I say anything else is wrong. It's wrong. Graham Hancock is wrong in what he says about ayahuasca. That it takes you, it has to take you through this experience, this torment of the judgment of the soul, and you have to look at what an awful person you are. That's the main thing that he says that's wrong. And if you're a terrible person and you've treated people badly, and you've got to face all those things, and you've got to pass before Ma'at and have her weigh your heart on the scales. One pen of the scales holds your heart, the other pen holds the feather of Ma'at. And all of that is completely delusional and wrong. You don't have to do any of that. Now, it is true that with the particular telluric plant agency of ayahuasca, you may be due for a therapeutic session. One or two at the most, and that's it. If she doesn't get you to where she wants to get you in one or two sessions, it would be insane to continue taking ayahuasca. The proof of really good ayahuasca and of a genuine experience is that you get it in the beginning. And with ayahuasca, because it does have a therapeutic aspect due to the plant species entity that indwells the plant, well, you could say you would have to face some of your personal shit. But that's not the same as saying that initiation with psychoactive plants always requires a perilous journey through the valley of the demons and the tormenting projections and angels or demons. I've never seen any angels. Angels, are you kidding? I've never seen any demons. And how deep do you think I've gone into the supernatural? Guess. So Graham is wrong. And I've always wanted to refute him on that. I would like to refute him directly and have a rational conversation about the way that he has evangelized ayahuasca and spun it in the direction of a Judeo-Christian judgment scenario, which is utterly, utterly wrong. There's nothing to judge you for, with, under, over. Nobody's going to judge you. You have never been so unjudged as when you stand in the presence of the organic light. So, bear these guidelines in mind and enjoy that passage from Iamblichus. And I wish you all good learning and teaching. And see you again here in the Sacred Groves.